Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
I'm Morgan Rhodes, and you're listening to Heat Rocks. Normally, we focus on a single album, but tis the season for holiday music, so we decided to tape a special episode where Oliver, I, and our guest have all picked some of our favorite holiday albums.
To join us on this holiday album roundup, we could not have asked for a better guest than film writer Alonzo Duralde. Let's not bury the lead here. He's one of the hosts of the Max Fun movie podcast, Who Shotcha, a show that both Morgan and I have been lucky enough to guest on. He, along with his husband Dave White, also taped the very long-running Linoleum Knife podcast. That is a mouthful. I cannot get linoleum.
I still can't either.
It's tough. Which is also about movies and has been around since 2010. So shouts out to that. Alonzo is also the senior film critic for The Wrap. And oh yeah, he wrote a book about Christmas movies a few years ago entitled Have Yourself a Movie, Little Christmas. Nice pun there. Alonzo, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you for having me. I'm a little out of my element. I'm not nearly as verbose about music as I am about movies, but I'm going to give it my best shot.
Well, I won't speak for Morgan, but I felt the same way being on Who Shot Yet.
No, you can speak for me.
But, you know, it's good to get out of the comfort zone.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
So we are actually taping this episode a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving, which means while you might have already started hearing a little bit of holiday music, and let's be honest here, when we're talking about holiday music, 99% of what we're talking about is largely Christmas music, aside from the occasional token dreidel song inclusion. We have not yet, I think, crossed over into the mandatory music Christmas music playlist hell that every retailer in America is somehow obliged to have to carry, but we're getting close to there. So I want to actually start with this question for the group is, do we actually like holiday music, and if so, why? And Alonzo, since you're our guest, let's start with you.
Well, I love it, but then I love a lot of Christmas things, so maybe I'm not to be trusted here. But I think when people complain about Christmas music, it's because, as you say, it's retailers and mainstream, you know, terrestrial radio. A lot of places will sort of have a playlist of about 15 songs.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, of course you get tired of hearing it if it's going to be that limited. But, you know, if more stores, if more, you know, the coasts here in L.A. and every city has that station that goes all Christmas at some point, if they would start throwing in, you know, Pearl Bailey's 5-pound box of money or something, it would kind of, it would feel like less of a, you know, the sort of forced death march into the same old stuff every December.
I think if Christmas music didn't have a twist on it, for me, if it didn't have a soulful twist, I wouldn't enjoy it as much. KGLH, which here in LA is 102.3, always goes through the holidays with black Christmas music, and so that makes it good for me. I miss hearing it in the malls and in retail situations because of late I've been doing all my shopping online. Yeah. And so that's where I would typically hear it in the malls. That said, I like Christmas music, but it has to have a soul twist on it for me.
I think someone like Amazon should just have a pop-up music player that immediately as you begin shopping after Black Friday, it just forces Christmas.
That's
music.
It.
You can replicate the mall experience right there.
That's it. Come on, Amazon.
I do think it is the over-familiarity with, as Alonzo points out, the same 15-song playlist. And we will talk a little bit about later about the canon of holiday music in America and how is it that new songs might be able to force their way in there. But in general, before we get there, there's certainly certain songs that I gravitate to, but a lot of them are not the classics. And I think, like Morgan, as you're pointing out, it's songs that are both familiar but with a twist, which is, in essence, holiday cover songs are what I can get into. Or similar to that would be songs that have become part of the alternative canon. A tune that always comes to mind would be something like The Waitress's Christmas Wrapping, which is a song that you grew up here in Los Angeles. K-Rock plays it every season. Mm-hmm. And because it's not something that I'm going to hear in every Starbucks I walk into, I have a soft spot in my heart for that in a way that may not work necessarily for the umpteenth rendition of, like, Jingle Fucking Bells.
Deck those halls, trim those trees, raise up cups of Christmas cheer. I just need to catch my breath, Christmas by myself this year.
Well,
We came down to three of our faves. But if we hadn't picked what we had picked, were there some other albums that we might have thrown out there besides what we ended up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you should see my iTunes. I have a staggering array of this stuff. I don't know. I hear what y'all are saying, and I do like a soulful twist. I love, you know, say the Phil Spector Christmas album. I like a lot of the covers and the, you know, where people sort of switch up genres. But, you know, there's something about the traditionalness of Christmas music where I listen to people that I don't ordinarily seek out. You know, I don't really have any use for the Ray Conniff singers the other 11 months of the year, but boy, do I want to hear their Christmas stuff,
sure.
You know, Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians, people like that. So I do like an old school Christmas jam. And I think that there is such a deep catalog that people don't know about because, again, you know, the 15 songs, you know, I think even within that, there are discoveries to be made and, you know, like, you know, the Ella Wishes You a Swingin' Christmas. I mean, good heavens.
Sure.
That is delicious stuff.
And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
And you only get little, you know, bits of it. I mean, even Jingle Bells, I think if you listen to Lena Horne's version,
sure,
she like sexes that up a lot, you know, and we'll get to a Jingle Bells in the album that I picked. So I think even there's no song that can't be zhuzhed a little. Even
sure.
Like the Shins did a cover of Wonderful Christmas Time, which if you hate the Paul McCartney version, I feel sorry for you, but I know you're out there. I think if you listen to, say, what the Shins did with it, it's like, oh, no, there is a song in here, you know.
Sure, sure. I think I might have, and we were talking a little bit before we got started, that on my mind was Johnny Mathis.
Mm.
But then I was like, how are you going to talk about Johnny Mathis but also leave out Motown Christmas?
Sure.
Motown Christmas album was a great album, but I fell for it on the strength of a song called Little Christmas Tree, and that was Michael Jackson, of course, a young Michael Jackson.
Right.
The song was written by George Clinton.
Just like me.
And I thought about that, but I was like, oh, get out of your comfort zone. Don't do something that's super black. But then I picked Christmas in Soulville, which is about as black as you could get.
Which I thank you for alerting me to, because I did not know it existed. And now it's going to be, you know, it's getting into that crowded iPod.
That's a good one. It is a good one.
I did not have an alternative. And I realized I love the idea of this episode when we first started batting it around. And of course, it makes sense. We did a Summer Songs episode, so why not do something that is suitable to this season. But there are certainly holiday songs, but holiday albums are a different story because in theory it means that you can really sit with the entire album rather than just cherry picking the tunes you like. So the album that I chose, and of course we'll get to that in the second half of the show, was really the only thing that came to mind as something that I could actually sit down and listen to end without wanting to immediately start reaching for the fast forward button. And maybe that just speaks to a limitations in my imagination or my desire to seek out other alternative holiday albums that I could roll with. But it was hard because I think for me, when I think of holiday music, it really is about songs. It's mm-hmm. about individual tracks rather than entire albums.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might find some, though, that would work for you. I mean, you know, Tracy Thorne's, I think, my God, Snow. I forget what it's called. I'm blanking now. But she put out a Christmas album a couple of years ago that is gorgeous, and the individual tracks are you know, thematic, but not necessarily of a piece. And you know, I think that's one that you could actually find yourself enveloped in and not feel antsy about it.
It occurs to me that there probably is a Dr. Demento holiday album out there.
Oh, there at least one.
And that I could probably roll with. And again, this is a product of having grown up in Los Angeles listening to Dr. Demento songs on K-Rock.
Oh, Santa Claus, Oh, Santa Claus, he breaks lots of laws. He trespasses. He breaks and enters. He travels all around the world without a valid passport. I'm a Hanukkah bush.
How about you, Morgan?
In terms of individual songs, there are individual songs that I love. One is Brian McKnight and Boyz II Men, a jam called Let It Snow. It's so R&B. I mean, and it's so Boyz II Men. Of course, we had that episode of Boyz II Men.
Come over here and help me trim the tree.
That's one of the ones that I love. And we had been talking about George Michael. We talked about George Michael on another episode, but Do They Know It's Christmas is one of those that always reminds me of George Michael.
But say a prayer. Pray for the other ones. At Christmas time, it's hard, but when you're having fun.
It's interesting that your go-to for George Michael is Do They Know It's Christmas and not Last Christmas, which I think is the one that a lot of people would think of.
Do They Know It's Christmas? That's my jammy jam.
All right.
That was Live Aid?
Yeah.
No. Yes. No.
Did they have a name for?
They did.
Band-Aid.
Yeah.
Live Aid, yeah. Band-Aid.
Yeah, Live Aid was the live Aid. Concert of that show. Yes.
He was just so sexy on that part of the song. Rest in peace, George.
So as I mentioned, we taped a summer music episode earlier this year. Now, I was thinking about the relationship between music and seasons. And there is not, to me, the same kind of well-defined canon of summer music, yet people, and as evinced by that episode, people have a very strong sense of what makes for summer songs. So I'm wondering if there's such a thing as winter music that is separate or distinct from holiday music, or is holiday music by default our version of winter music?
I feel like it's been folded in because, you know, you were saying earlier about how except for the occasional, you know, dreidel song, so much of what we think of as quote unquote Christmas music really is just songs about winter. Winter Wonderland, Sleigh Ride, you know, Baby It's Cold Outside. So much of those things don't really have any kind of direct bearing on the holiday. It's just about weather, you know. And of course, we have to remember that winter weather at Christmas time is a northern hemisphere phenomenon, you know, and not even everywhere here. I mean, like certainly in L.A., I've never had a white Christmas, but that has somehow just kind of become part of the Christmas canon that you can bust out something like that. And so I keep waiting for more songs to get added, like in the way that My Favorite Things was never intended to be a holiday song, but because it mentions, you know, packages and snowflakes,
sure,
it is now in there. So like, you know, there's a Frank Sinatra did this sort of pretentious jazz album called, oh God, now I'm blanking on the name. It's something of color, where each song has a different, like red, blue, and the white on that album has a very kind of wintry Christmas feel.
I think that when I think of summer music just has a completely different meaning. It is about what you're going to do in the summer. Mm. It evokes that summertime, hot fun in the summertime, or Will Smith summertime. It's just about the freedom that comes with summer. When I think of holiday music or winter music, it's all centered for me around Christmas, not the rest of winter, not early November or any of that. You know what I'm saying? It's just about Christmas. And I think summer music gives a sort of a wider base of themes for me, where I think winter music for me is just about Christmas.
Although I was going to say to that point, I think, you know, you're right. Summer music is about going out into the world and doing things and being active. And I think winter music is the exact opposite. It's about coziness and the hearth and
being
in front of a roaring fire with the family and, you know, that kind of thing. So thematically, there's a consistency there.
Right. I mean, I think, again, to that point, I just think of music that one cocoons yourself with because you're going to be spending time indoors. You want something that provides comfort in cold climate, even though we don't really get that here in Los Angeles. But the idea of it, I can appreciate. And I do think there's a different tone as a quality because of its music that's really meant to evoke warmth, a kind of interior space. It's very different than summer songs, which is all about, Morgan, as you were saying, going out into the world and doing things.
And partying. I think summer music is about dancing. And I think winter music or Christmas music is, to your point, about enjoying it in a sort of an insular space with your family, comfort.
Yeah, I mean, the history of Christmas as we know it, it's basically, you know, it's the Christian church taking over like the solstice and the Yule and all the fun sort of pagan stuff that was designed to keep people from just losing their minds in the dark winter, you know, as an excuse to light torches and eat and drink and, you know, do all that stuff to kind of stave off the cold. And so we've incorporated all of that stuff into our modern Christmas tradition. So, yeah, that's reflected in those songs that we sing.
Christmas is not historically accurate?
That's a whole other episode.
Well, we will be back with more of our holiday album special, including our actual albums, with our guest film critic, Alonzo Duralde, after a word from our fellow Max Fun podcast. Keep it locked.
Welcome back to WKEP at Night. Up next, looks like we've got a PSA from local forest ranger Duck Newton.
Do I start now or?
Yeah, and lean in, Duck.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, I wanted to address the unfortunate situation that, okay, listen, two people, good people that I and a lot of y'all have known our whole lives are dead, torn to shreds.
A savage, bloodthirsty beast that defies human comprehension. If you'd like to know more, stop by the Cryptonomica, Kepler's premier museum of the macabre, just off Highway 20.
Come on, we just wanted to warn y'all, to beg you, if you see one of those things out in the forest, don't fight, don't scream, run. Run as far as you can.
Doc, it's almost midnight. Listen, folks, if you see anything, please go to thelamplighter.org and let us know. And get behind a locked door tonight.
Anything else we need to... Oh, they're leaving. Okay, well, that's thelamplighter.org, and stay safe out there, Kepler.
I love it.
Good stuff.
Every time.
Well, I hope that you're enjoying this podcast you're listening to as much as we are pretending to. But anyway, why not listen to another podcast too? It's called The Flophouse.
And on our podcast, we have recently watched a movie, often a bad movie, and we review it on our podcast, but mainly talk about other stuff and, I don't know, hang out.
It's all about hanging out, feeling like you're being with your best friends. Who are your best friends? Us three. Dan McCoy, Emmy Award-winning writer for The Daily Show, Stuart Wellington, owner of the best bar in Brooklyn, Hinterlands, and Elliot Kalin, former Emmy-winning head writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, former head writer of Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return, so many things. Author of the upcoming children's book,
All right, that's enough.
The Elliot's credits just go on and on.
Yeah, but if you like the idea of listening to three funny guys talk about bad movies, then why not come over and listen to The Flophouse? It's available at MaximumFun.org or wherever fine podcasts are found.
So get out of here.
We are back on Heat Rocks talking about our favorite holiday albums with our guest, co-host of the Max Fun Movie Podcast, Who Shotcha, Alonzo Duralde.
For this episode, each of us picked a favorite holiday album, and Alonzo, you went with the 1963 LP by Mr. Christmas himself, Andy Williams.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
So, you know, somebody on Twitter recently asked the question, what's an album that you love because your parents introduced you to it? And my parents were older. My you know, the year I was born, my mother turned 40, my father turned 47, and they were both immigrants from Spain. So they didn't really follow pop music in this country. So there, most of what I gleaned from them was like classical albums, but there were a few records that they had of vocalists they liked. And we had this handful of Christmas albums. We had, you know, Bing and Dean and the Boston Pops. But the Andy Williams one was the one that was always just kind of a personal favorite. And to me, really signified that, you know, when that record hit the turntable, like the season was on.
Happy holiday.
Happy holiday.
Happy holiday.
Happy holiday.
While the merry bells keep ringing. Happy holiday to you.
We tend to think of Christmas classic songs as if they've always been around, and the idea that someone could have originated one seems, or can claim authorship over one seems almost alien. But it has to be said that with this album, it is when Andy Williams introduced into that aforementioned holiday song canon his classic hit, It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Yeah, so this was actually written for his TV show. And, you know, this, he had a variety show that was on year-round, but his Christmas specials very quickly became kind of legendary. You know, he would bring his brothers out, and they had been a singing act before Andy went solo. He gave the Osmonds their first big national platform, another brother act. And so these were big productions, and he would bring out his wife, Claudine Longet, and then their children. And then even famously, after they divorced, she would still come out on the Christmas special with the kids, you know, and you know, sort of presented this sort of amicable, you know, fractured but still, you know, united family front. But yeah, so It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year was just a song that was written for the special. There were a bunch that were written for him over the years, but that one just really hit and has become this staple.
There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases all long ago.
Is this your favorite song off the album?
It is the one that immediately makes me happy. Like, you know, Dave has said that he's getting a little tired of it because it's been so constantly rediscovered over the years and almost become kind of a point of irony. Like in the horror movie Krampus, it opens with It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year over shots of, like, you know, shoppers pummeling each over other on a Black Friday, you know. But I hear those opening notes and I'm in. And I think one of the things that I love about this record as a whole is the orchestrations are so on point and so just well-crafted. I mean, you just, you know, the more I listen to it, the more I realize how much attention is being paid to, you know, when the chorus comes in and what the strings are doing and all of that stuff. And so even as somebody as stone-eared as I am, who doesn't really take deep dives into music, the repetition has made me appreciate how well crafted this is.
One of the things that this album reminds me of, and I was listening to it a little bit before the break and on the way over here, was the introduction, at least in my own knowledge, of crooners and crooners singing Christmas songs. Mm-hmm. So it introduced me to, it reminds me of a group of crooners, you know, Bob, Bing, Perry, Mel Torme, Tony Bennett,
Sinatra,
Nat, and for that matter, Johnny Mathis, yeah. And a time where that variety specials, Christmas variety specials, would be on television. I'm not saying I'm old enough to remember that, man. This is just what I heard. No, I remember it, actually. But
it's a rumor on the internet.
It's on Wikipedia, but it reminds me of that time, that part of the celebration of Christmas was gathering around the television and to watch those specials.
Absolutely.
And those specials would not be complete with having a crooner sing and close it out with White Christmas. My favorite song on this album that you picked is Sweet Little Jesus Boy.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm churchy. So you knew I was going to go there. But I was surprised that was one of my favorites. I've heard it sung many times and in many different ways than how Andy Williams. But it's Andy Williams.
Sure.
So.
No, there are people who will give him flack about that cover. And then on the 2 years later on the Merry Christmas with Andy Williams, he does Mary's Little Boy Child,
yeah,
which was first popularized by Harry Belafonte. And he whitens them up significantly,
yeah,
like the grammar even on Sweet Little Jesus Boy.
Absolutely. And like I said, I've heard it a lot of different ways. And it was generally a part of a Christmas pageant at the church. Mm-hmm. I think I just was attracted to something that was familiar.
Sure.
That said, it is as white as this paper we're looking at right now. But it's Andy Williams,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
It just seems like we can't do right. Look how we treated you. But please, sir, forgive us, Lord.
But I'm with you on the orchestrations. Mm-hmm. It's big and it's sweeping, a lot like all of the crooners and their band sounded back
sure
then. So
I'm also wondering, and I don't know if anyone here has an answer to this, but All three of us chose albums in which the songs were recorded in the 1960s. And when I was listening to the Andy Williams Christmas album to prep for this, it really hit me that this has the sound of that classic Christmas playlist that we've been talking about that you'll hear in every retail store. And why is it that it was these albums from the 60s that have become our de facto holiday playlist and have managed to hold on to that for 50 years? And I'm wondering if maybe, because both of you are mentioning the power and the importance of the variety show. In the 1960s is you know, at least a decade and a half into the proliferation of television, so it's not like the first decade in which TV's become everywhere. But I'm wondering if there's a tie-in between the fact that television has now become the dominant pop culture medium. These albums are selling gold and later platinum. And for all those reasons, it's given albums and these recordings from this particular decade a longevity that you don't see, I think, with other holiday albums that have come out subsequently. And I don't have a good explanation for this, but I'm wondering if either of you have thoughts.
I think that the power of nostalgia in dealing with Christmas media is indomitable. And so many times I think we will fixate on certain periods because we think of them as the most Christmassy. Like, there's so much kind of Christmas Victoriana when you look at, like, Christmas cards or, plum pudding, like the things that people talk about are visual representations of Christmas because it takes us to Charles Dickens, and so that's like Dickens and A Christmas Carol is sort of a fixed point of Christmas that we keep going back to. And I think, these sort of 60s crooners, the Rat Pack guys and Andy Williams and Doris Day and other female vocalists of that era is another sort of fixed point of nostalgia. Mm. I mean, the song White Christmas, you could go on and on about its nature is like, it was popular during World War II, and it was a song about nostalgia then. Right. And then, now it's a nostalgia for the time. So much of that stuff kind of carries over. So, I think there is just something about that period where we kind of think of it as they really nailed it. And we just want to keep going back to that well.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I was going to say tradition, too. It reminds me of a time and the wonder that Christmas held for me as a kid. Well, I mentioned Let It Snow earlier, Brian McKnight, but that reminds me of being an adult when you could actually leave and go to the liquor store real quick. Not me, but people that went to the liquor store and come back. And some of these songs and these albums from the 60s just remind me of the wonder when I believed in Santa, the things I would hear my parents and my grandparents play. Not my pick, but some of the stuff that that you guys picked. It just holds nostalgia and tradition for me. And so it appeals to me because it reminds me a lot of how I grew up and being a child.
So I said I would tackle this earlier. Let's get into it right now, which is, what is the most recent holiday song that's managed to claw its way into the greatest hits pantheon? And the one that occurred to me was Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas is You.
Yeah.
But that song came out almost 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Has there been anything more recent that you think is a contender?
There's that, I don't know what it's called, but there's a Josh Groban song that I keep.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just going to veto.
I keep turning it off when it comes on to Sirius XM. So, like, I don't even know the title, but I hear the notes. I'm like, no. So I know they're trying to make that happen.
Yeah.
Not really. There are of the that time period, even, and I don't know if this predates Mariah Carey or not, but like you'll occasionally hear like NSYNC's Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. There's a few songs that have some bearing and some following, but as far as hitting with the impact of something like White Christmas, All I Want for Christmas is You is about the only one.
I agree with you on the Mariah thing. That's the last one that I thought, man, this is cool and this is a jam. And I think she performed it a cappella on Fallon with the Roots Band, or they sat together and had their little instruments and they did it. I'm wondering, too, if her Christmas album is one of the best-selling Christmas albums, because it wasn't just that song. She had a whole album, so I'd be curious to find out if that's one of the bestsellers.
Mariah in that era, though, that was, to quote a phrase that our previous guest, Christopher Melanfi, likes, it was her imperial period. Like, yes. Mariah could put out anything in the 90s, and that thing would have just shot to the top of the charts.
And, you know, she did put out a second Christmas album that has a modified version of All I Want for Christmas Is You. It sort of skips the slow part at the beginning and jumps right into the grooving part, which, you know, I'm sure is more radio-friendly for some people.
Sure, but you can't skip that slow.
No, of course not.
That slow wind. All right, man. So Oliver Wong has picked a heater, a true heat rock. It cannot be disputed. Tell us what you chose.
Vince Guaraldi's 1965, I think, soundtrack to A Charlie Brown Christmas. As I said before, this was the only album that came to mind for me to fit today's theme, partly because I just can't think of another single album. I don't mean to be pedantic about that, but really, it's just as an album, this is something that I can really truck with. And I think for certain, part of my affection for it is really just bound up in the aching melancholy of Guaraldi's arrangements and compositions, least of all in a song like, as you're hearing in the background, Christmas Time Is Here. And to quote from Charles Mudede of Seattle's The Stranger newspaper, quote, listening to it is like watching snow through a window, unquote. And I live here in L.A., so there's never snow through our windows, but yet I totally understand what he means. The music here, for me, is also inseparable from my memories and nostalgia of reading Peanuts, the Charles Schulz strip that, of course, the television special was based off of. And I think for people of a certain generation, probably including everyone here in this room, Schulz did something really remarkable with Peanuts in terms of taking this daily comic strip and imbuing it with the tone and issues in a very, very subtle way of depression and anxiety and longing, but doing it in such a gentle in kind way. And I think one of the things that makes the soundtrack that Guaraldi put together so special is that he figured out how to take those themes that we see in the Peanuts strip and give it a musical form.
Mm-hmm.
Was this an album that either of you grew up listening to as well?
I didn't grow up with the album, but the Charlie Brown Christmas is iconic, yeah. And we watched it every year. And so I came to know this music just as something that we look forward to because we look forward to Charlie Brown Christmas. I still watch Charlie Brown Christmas as an adult, and I still have the same feeling about it.
Yeah.
So Christmas Time Is Here was just something that I looked forward to hearing. And I love this album. I love, love, love that you picked this album.
Yeah, I don't think I owned the album. I think it might have been one of the first Christmas albums I bought as an adult. We didn't have it in the house, but yes, every year that was appointment television, not to be missed, and
yes.
And that music just would just get into your DNA. And you're absolutely right about nailing the tone of the strip. I was talking to Morgan before the show that when that Peanuts movie came out a couple of years ago, that new 3D animated feature film, Dave and I talked about a lot how it needed to be melancholy. That you can't do Peanuts without like that sort of in the bone sort of sadness and anxiety and worry that the Charlie Brown character is all about. And, you know, I think it's so essential. And so for them to pick this music, you know, CBS executives thought they were nuts, you know, that you would have this jazz music on a kiddie show, but it's absolutely appropriate. And it's a big part of what makes that show such a perennial and, like you said, so iconic.
And jazz is mature for a cartoon, but I never really felt like Charlie Brown and his crew were kids. I mean, they were working out real issues. Charlie Brown was in therapy and Lucy was his therapist charging 5 cents for advice. Their parents were mostly mute, so they had to work out their decisions by themselves. This was a smart choice, an unusual choice, but I can never think of Charlie Brown without thinking of this music. I can never do that, and I'm just glad you picked this album.
I got to go off on a quick tangent. I did not see the 3D Peanuts movie, but obviously, Alonzo, you did. Did they have the adults in it going doing the wah, 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 wah?
You know, if they were featured at all, yes. But they pretty much operated in that same sort of adult-free universe that this strip has always maintained. So,
well, at least they maintained some of the traditions of the old days.
You know, that movie gets a lot more right than wrong. Okay. You'd be surprised. Okay. I went in expecting to loathe it. I was like, no, this is actually, you know, it's no Snoopy Come Home, but it's not bad.
The Snoopy talk?
Oh, heavens no.
This always bugged me. I'm so sorry for taking us down this road.
It's okay.
But you can always, like, Snoopy was able to articulate things and ideas and words and phrases in the comic strip, but in the cartoon, he can't talk.
Right.
And I never understood as a creative choice, why would you do that when Snoopy is one of the most, I mean, the dude wrote novels. I mean, and he can't talk. I mean, come on. What's going on with that?
I think he speaks something. It's just something that we as human beings don't understand.
Apparently Schultz did, though. In any case, Morgan, to your point, too, about this being a jazz album, I didn't realize this until I did research to prep for this, but it is one of the top two best-selling jazz albums of all time, the other one being Miles Davis's Kind of Blue, which, of course,
sort of disparate.
Again, one of the most important jazz albums in terms of the form.
Sure.
And one could easily say that Garaldi gets this because of its inherent populism, not because it's like the best jazz ever recorded. But that said, I kind of like the fact that this is like one of the best-selling jazz LPs of all time. That's kind of nice.
We were talking before we started, and it's got 32 million streams on Spotify. So it's popular with a lot of folks.
Right. And that's only in the last week. No,
right. What's your jam off of here?
Well, I mean, Christmas Time Is Here is fantastic. You know, the Linus and Lucy theme is also just one of those instant Proustian kind of triggers. But because Garaldi was, and let's not forget, a very accomplished jazz composer and arranger himself, I think one of the songs on here that I just love, love, love is Skating. It's so lively. It has that beautiful kind of Bill Evans piano element to it. And it's a reminder that even though the best known songs on here are a little bit more melancholy, there are these moments of brightness that Garaldi also balances things with as well.
I would be surprised, or I would say I wouldn't be surprised rather, that for a lot of jazz musicians, that this was sort of their gateway drug.
Ooh.
Or jazz fans.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, that this was sort of an early exposure. I was like, this, where can I get more of this? I just in listening to that little snippet of Skating, like, you can hear like the drummers whisk over the top of his,
sure.
you know, over the skins and stuff. And it is just so precisely put together. And it is so evocative of not just of winter, but of kind of childhood joy and so many other things.
And in the scene where this is used, the kids look so light. There's always the expressions on their faces like, and because we didn't grow up, because I grew up in California, I didn't know what that skating thing was about. This song is so perfect because it is light and it is blissful.
It's a snowflake on your tongue.
Yeah, indeed. My jam off this album is O Tannenbaum. Mm-hmm. This is really mature because this is a song I expect to hear in a lounge. But I love this song. I loved listening to it on the way over here. And again, probably people will, you know, be attached to Christmas Time Is Here, but there were some other jams on here. I think it's worth mentioning, too, that there was some controversy around this album, that the original musicians that played on this album from the trio weren't credited on the release and didn't find out until later. One, and I don't know his name, his daughter went into a record store to buy the album and saw that his name wasn't on there. They're blaming the controversy on Fantasy Records, who they think just didn't really care about how the album was labeled, and there was some drama. I think it has been remedied, but in the earliest copies of this album, the two guys that played on it are not credited. the two guys that went into the studio to create the cues are credited. Right.
I also read that the musicians were only paid $128 for working on this session. And even, I'm sure, by inflation standards, it's a little bit more today. That's still not a lot of album money for one of the best-selling jazz albums of all
yeah.
time.
Right.
Well, if they kept their publishing. And, of course, he didn't live long. Of course, he passed.
76?
At 47 years old.
But I do love his take on O Tannenbaum and on the Christmas song, which he does here. And I would have almost loved to hear just an entire album of him kind of doing that to the standards, because he's really sort of – you know, it's almost that My Favorite Things thing of like, let's take it apart and put it back together in that uniquely jazzy way.
Vince Guaraldi made these songs his, as they say.
Sure.
So, Morgan, you are taking us home with, as I mentioned before, another album filled with songs from the 1960s. This is the 2007 Stax compilation, Christmas in Soulsville.
Stax Records, okay, Stax Records, which, of course, started in Memphis. It started out as Satellite Records and then became Stax. I like albums that throw out the whole roster. And Christmas in Soulsville was Stax's entire roster, or the G's. Of course, the franchise player was Otis Redding, but he died in 1967 and they had to keep building. I picked this album because of the blackness of it. I didn't grow up listening to it. And in fact, I discovered it as I was trying to prepare for Tuesday Reviews Day when we were going to talk about Christmas albums. And I stumbled on this album and was like, oh my God. What is this? Whereas I think both the Andy Williams album and the Vince Guaraldi album conjure up, you know, eggnog and warm apple cider, Christmas in Soulsville, skip all that and bring the Crown Royal. This is black, okay? Real black. One of the things that I like about it is its twist on these Christmas songs. Merry Christmas, Baby is flirty. It's the soul, it's the boom of Otis Redding's voice, and it's flirty. So you forget about Christmas and you're like, wait, is this about relationships? And that's what it feels like. I guess one of the standouts to me on the album is the Staple Singers, who took the Mary out of Christmas.
Who took the Mary out of Christmas?
Leave it to the Staple Singers in the 60s to politicize Christmas. They're talking about everyone's fighting wars, trying to find out how to make it to the stars. And I'm like, this could be about Christmas. This could be about civil rights. You just don't know. So that's one of my favorite songs on the album.
But you said that some of this stuff is flirty, but there's a few jams on here that are straight up raunchy. And of course, I'm thinking of the two different versions they have of Santa Claus Wants Some Love.
I don't want no turkey. I don't care nothing about no cake. I want you to come and get woman before that children wait. Cause Santa's gone from loving.
So, Morgan, you have spoken a lot about the songs that were loud inside your house and the ones that you had to kind of sneak on the side. How would your parents have reacted to Santa Claus Wants Some Lovin'?
That would have been the last album I played in the house, okay? They would have been like, you chose this over Johnny Mathis. But my one aunt that I mentioned to you when we were doing the Millie Jackson special, she would have played this, you know? And if Johnny Guitar Watson snuck his way on this album, this would be a hit for her. But I love that take on it. I said at the start that this album is really, really black. Rance Allen Group has a song in here called White Christmas, which I think is probably the blackest version of White Christmas. And heretofore, I thought was one of the blackest Christmas songs ever. And then I came across the emotions, Black Christmas.
Look at you, look at me, singing around the Christmas tree. With a black way of living, some way of giving. This may sound strange, but it's gonna be a beautiful black Christmas for me.
I didn't know until I started researching this, I didn't know that the emotions were ever on Stax. I came to know them in the Columbia years.
Oh, I see.
Don't Ask My Neighbor, and of course with Earth, Wind, and Fire, Boogie Wonderland, and I Don't Want to Lose Your Love. So I didn't really know the history of them on Stax.
Blind Alley? I mean.
Didn't know.
Oh, man, they were killing on Stax. But anyways.
Didn't know. Didn't know that Isaac Hayes had produced their album. So yeah. I came to them late in the party. And speaking of Isaac Hayes, when you talk about Flirty, The Mistletoe and Me.
And we will always be just you, the mistletoe and me.
That's some baby-making Christmas music right there.
I was about to say, you're not enjoying this with the family. It's you and Bae, okay?
Now, I'm curious. This is a 2007 compilation.
Sure.
Do you think that they would have done this in the 60s as a sort of mass, like, here's our Christmas album? Or do you think it's the sort of thing that only with hindsight we can be like, can check these out?
You know, that's a good question. That's a good question. I think Oliver's probably more familiar with Stax than me. I can't imagine them making a conscious decision that we're not going to release this now. And I don't know if it was, you know, if it was just these adult themes. I don't know if there were issues with publishing because Stax went through their whole drama.
Yeah. I mean, this is actually an update on a 1980s compilation that also did the same thing, which was to go through the Stax Fold catalog and then put it all together into a Christmas themed LP. It didn't have the same name. I can't remember what the previous iteration was. I'm just wondering if it was common for R&B labels to compile Christmas stuff. Like, you mentioned that Motown did it, but I'm wondering what year Motown did it. And if they did it early in the 60s or early 70s, why wouldn't Stax have followed suit? Because Stax did put out comps in the early 70s.
Right.
Because they had such an important staple that they brought together people to do these comps. So it is a little bit surprising that you didn't see this earlier.
Right. I mean, like I said, I found this 2 years ago prepping for Tuesday Reviews Day. There's only one instrumental track on this album, but it's gorgeous. It's Booker T and the MGs, Winter Wonderland. And as soon as that organ starts, you're like, good Lord. That one's precious, and I think this album as a whole just reminds me of the music of Stax Records, which to me always was a great blend of gospel, of soul, and of blues, and that is this compilation in a nutshell. And I can't remember a better use of an entire roster, except as my homegirl reminded me of Death Row Records Christmas. She was like, why did Death Row put out a Christmas album?
Like, why not, actually?
It was like, ooh. So we talked about Nate Dogg and that Santa Claus thing.
Be thankful for the gifts you receive. Yeah. This morning I woke up with a reason to sing.
Reason.
This morning I woke up to an unlit Christmas.
The last song on here that I want to mention is that Little Johnny Taylor, Please Come Home for Christmas, because the build of the song and some of the lyrics of the song are so gospely, and of course he was a child gospel star, but it reminds me of Cassetta George's Walk Around Heaven. He says there'll be, you know, bells will be ringing, there'll be no sorrows, it'll be nothing but joy, and it sounds a lot like Walk Around Heaven. So as I was mentioning earlier, Stax was always a good blend of gospel, of blues, and of R&B. And Little Johnny Taylor went on to be grown Johnny Taylor and had that adult-centered R&B music.
The
this is Christmas. Yeah, it's Christmas, my dear. The time of the year. The time of the year to be with the one you really love. Then won't you tell me?
Before we wrap things up, I thought we could each maybe pick a different holiday song. So again, not affiliated with the albums that we chose, but a different holiday song that you'd want our listeners to listen to. And I'll start things off with a kind of obscure 1988 hip-hop Christmas song, Cold Chillin' Christmas, off of the Winter Warnerland. This was a Warner Brothers, I don't know if it was an in-house comp only, or I should say promo-only thing, but it's off of the Winter Warnerland compilation. It is Marley Marl producing the Cold Chillin' stable, which includes Big Daddy Kane. I think Roxanne Shanté is on here. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's like the symphony, except Christmas version.
You hear a lot of jingle bells at Christmas time, but I deck the halls with the Christmas rhyme. Santa used to drive a sleigh in Christmas past. He was chilling when I seen him last. A Lamborghini with a spoiler kit. Driving looked like Santa, and I said, oh, it's a feeling.
Alonzo, how about you?
Well, I mentioned Pearl Bailey's 5 Pound Box of Money and Tracy Thorne's Joy in passing, both of which are favorites. But I am still a, you know, I love my easy listening, and I really love the Canadian vocal group of the Free Design, and they have a song that I think is both holiday appropriate and yet like not exactly the sort of holiday sentiment you're used to hearing, and that would be "Close Your Mouth, It's Christmas Time."
Ooh.
Ooh. Put your big bag in the drawer. Bring your mind and body back from the store.
Their harmonies are the greatest, and I kind of like how there's almost sort of a scoldy element to this song of like, you know.
Almost? It says shut your mouth.
Yeah, true. You're right. A thoroughly scoldy element to the song that I think will get you through some family get-togethers maybe.
Morgan, how about you?
For me, it would be, I would take it to dance music. In 2007, King Street Records put out a dance music compilation, and two of my favorite songs on there were one, It's Christmas by the Ananda Project, and also Let Us Adore Him, Kenny Bobian. Kenny Bobian is a big-time star in soulful house music, but especially known for gospel house music. And I had the opportunity one Christmas to be on the air on Christmas Eve, and I closed my set with Kenny Bobian and Let Us Adore Him. So I'd recommend that for house music fans and people that just want to spice it up BPM style for Christmas. That'll do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Alonzo Duralde. Be sure to catch his podcast, Who Shot Ya, on our fine network, as well as his and his partner's pod, Linoleum Knife. Thank you so much for joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
Where can people find you on socials and such?
I'm at A Duralde on Twitter, A-D-U-R-A-L-D-E, at Linoleum Cast on Instagram, and I'm the only Alonzo Duralde on Earth, so I'm really easy to find on Facebook.
Before we get out of here, and this might be kind of hard for you to predict because this we're taping this a month before we're going to air this, are there any holiday movies that you already have seen that you would recommend people check out?
Two, actually. I'm a fan of the new Grinch, which no one is more shocked than me to say that sentence, because I really, after that live-action version and given the perfection of the original, you know, TV special, I was like, why bother? It's quite charming, very funny. The sentiment works. I liked it all. I'm also a big fan of a British film that we're getting this year called Anna and the Apocalypse. It is a Christmas zombie musical.
I got to get into that.
This is good.
It is good.
Okay.
They are biting off a lot, literally and figuratively, and I think it really works.
I love it.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wang, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the holly and jolly Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
Yo, be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Heat Rocks Pod. You can find a link to our Facebook group on our webpage, which is heatrockspod.com. That's where we'll post show notes for every episode, including a track listing of everything you've heard today and more goodies. Again, that's at heatrockspod.com.
We want to thank all of our 5-star iTunes reviewers, including Matt Bomar, who says that we are, quote, always a great listen, unquote, and that he, quote, comes out with a newfound respect for whatever album we've discussed, unquote. Thank you, Matt. And if you, listener, have not had a chance yet, please, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes, because that is the way that new listeners find their way to us. And heck, we might read part of your review on the air.
Yo, we also wanted to thank all of our social media fans and family out there, including Lauren Fintoni, who said, Heat Rocks Pod is my favorite music conversation this year. Funny, insightful, and always leaving me want to listen to music with fresh ears. Shout out to you. We also want to thank Trombone Alex. He says, gotta include Heat Rocks Pod for my best of 2018 for its insightful music criticism. Check out their Women Behaving Boldly episodes. We do so appreciate both of you, and in general, we appreciate the tweezies and the retweezies. Good to see you, Oliver.
Good to see you too, Morgan. And one last thing, here is a teaser for next week's episode, where writer Linnell George joins us to talk about David Bowie's smash-tastic 1975 album, Young Americans.
I had two friends who were older and had older siblings, and we would go over to one of their houses and go in the oldest sister's room when she wasn't home and like look through her record collection. But that's when I actually saw who David Bowie was and saw the record. And then I began to think, who is this person? And again, questions, you know, about the music that was coming from this album and who he was, who he looked, what he looked like. And as you mentioned, you know, this white British man, you know, like, how was he able to, like, approximate this, this plastic soul, you know, as we found out later. But that made me curious. And then I did do the saving up, and I went to the record store to buy it. So that was the discovery. It was holding my friend Jerry's sister's album in my hand.
Yes.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.